Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are wrestling with a framework that has become, I think, the single biggest gatekeeper in the B2B world.
Oh, for sure.
SOC2 compliance. For any business that handles customer data in 2026, it's just not optional anymore.
That's absolutely right. We're talking about SOC2 or Service Organization Control 2, and it's the foundational security framework from the AICPA.
The American Institute of CPAs.
Exactly. It basically outlines how organizations should securely manage customer data. It's all based on these five key trust principles.
So our mission for this deep dive is to really pull out the actionable stuff from the sources you sent over. We want you, the listener, to walk away knowing not just what SOC2 is, but you know why you need it now.
And how to actually do it.
Yes, exactly. Because the shift is happening right now. And the sources pointed to three major forces driving it.
The first one is the biggest, I think. It's just customer expectations.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the days of a prospect just taking your word on security are over. Completely over.
Right.
If you want to close an enterprise client today, they will demand to see your SOC2 report. Often a type 2.
Before they even get to the contract review.
Before anything. It's pretty simple. No report, no contract.
It's the new cost of entry. It's proof.
Yeah.
If I'm giving you my data, I need to know your security is real, not just something from your marketing site.
Exactly. And that leads right into the second force, which is the regulatory landscape.
Okay.
There's just enormous pressure across sectors like healthcare, fintech, government contracting.
All the sensitive data industries.
Right. They have to demonstrate robust, standardized data protection. SOC2 is that auditable proof. It helps with regulators and, you know, increasingly with cyber insurance carriers, too.
That's a huge connection. So better compliance could mean lower insurance premiums? The investment starts paying for itself right there.
It can, yeah. And the third driver, which I find really interesting, is the pure competitive advantage.
Ah, so it's a differentiator.
It's an instant differentiator. You've got two vendors, identical services. One has a SOC2 report, the other doesn't.
The one with the report wins.
It wins. It's a signal of maturity, of having a professional security posture. It just builds trust immediately.
So to get you from zero to SOC2 fluent, we're going to structure this around three parts. First, we'll unpack the five core trust service principles.
Then we'll get into the weeds, the practical IT controls, the real checklist.
And finally, we'll break down the audit journey itself, especially for smaller businesses that might feel overwhelmed.
Sounds good. Let's start at the top.
Section one, the five trust service principles, the pillars of the framework. Now, it's important to know you don't need all five, but one of them. One is absolutely mandatory.
That mandatory principle is security. This is the big one. It's the umbrella that covers protecting systems against unauthorized access, both physical and logical.
So what does that actually look like in practice?
We're talking about things like multi-factor authentication, MFA, everywhere. Encryption of customer data, both at rest and in transit.
But on your servers, and as it moves across the internet.
Correct. Plus things like regular vulnerability scans and having a documented incident response plan. You have to have a plan for when things go wrong.
That makes sense as the foundation.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say my company offers a software platform and we guarantee like 99.99% uptime.
Then you absolutely must select the second principle, which is availability.
Okay.
Availability is all about ensuring your systems stay operational, just like you promised in your SLAs, your service level agreements.
So this would be things like redundant servers, failover systems.
Redundant infrastructure, automatic failover, disaster recovery planning, yes. But here's the detail that trips people up. You can't just say you have backups.
You have to prove them.
You have to have documented, tested restoration processes. If you can't prove you can actually recover the data from a backup, that control fails.
That's a huge shift from just checking a log file. You have to prove it works in practice.
Exactly. The third principle is processing integrity.
This sounds like it's for companies that do a lot of calculations or transactions.
That's the sweet spot. Think about a payroll processor or a financial services company. Processing integrity proves that data is processed completely, accurately, and on time.
So the output is what you'd expect from the input.
Precisely. You need controls like data validation on input fields, error detection, and really rigorous QA testing for any system changes before they go live.
All right, moving on to the principles that are about the type of data. We have confidentiality.
Right. Confidentiality protects information that you've specifically designated as confidential.
So this isn't just customer data.
It could be anything. Your source code, your secret business plans, client investment strategies. The controls are all about strict access restrictions, who gets to see what based on their role, and importantly, how you securely get rid of that data when you're done with it.
And the fifth principle is privacy, which feels similar, but it's different.
It's much narrower. It deals exclusively with personal information, PII, data that can be linked back to a person.
So it's about individual rights.
Exactly. This is where you see alignment with regulations like GDPR or CCPA. You need clear privacy notices, you need consent mechanisms, and a way for people to request access to or deletion of their data.
So to recap for you listening, you always start with security. Then you add the others, availability, integrity, confidentiality, or privacy, based on what your business actually does and what you promise your customers.
That flexibility is what makes it work. But no matter which ones you pick, you have to have the technical controls to back them up.
Okay, let's go there now. Let's switch from the high-level principles to the nuts and bolts. This is where it gets tough for the implementation teams. We're talking about the practical compliance checklist.
Let's start with access control requirements, because this is a huge focus for auditors. First off, MFA is required for all systems with customer data, period.
No exceptions for convenience.
None.
But that creates a lot of friction for users, right?
Yeah.
If you have to MFA into every single app, that's a big operational hurdle.
It is, and it forces a strategic move, usually toward a single sign-on solution that can manage MFA centrally. But that's just the start. You also need role-based access control, or RBAC.
Meaning people only get access to what they absolutely need for their job.
The principle of least privilege, yes. And to prove you're enforcing this, auditors specifically demand documented evidence of quarterly access revise.
Okay, quarterly. So every 3 months, a manager has to review their team's access and literally sign off on it.
Yes. They have to review the lists and attest that the permissions are still appropriate. It's designed to stop permission creep, where people just collect access over time and never lose it.
That's a huge administrative task.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing it gets even more granular.
Oh, it does. Strong password policies, obviously a minimum 12 characters. But here's a specific one. For administrative accounts, the power users' passwords have to be changed every 90 days.
Every 90 days.
And when an employee is terminated, you need automated offboarding. Their access has to be revoked immediately, automatically, no gaps.
That level of detail is everything. Let's shift to network and infrastructure security. What's the baseline there?
Beyond just having a good firewall, network segmentation is critical. You have to separate your production environment, where customer data lives, from your development and corporate networks.
So a compromised laptop on the corporate Wi-Fi can't just jump over into the production database.
That's the idea. And again, it's not a set it and forget it thing. The sources require quarterly firewall rule reviews.
There's that word again, quarterly.
You have to prove you're cleaning up old rules and making sure those boundaries are still solid.
Okay, let's talk data protection measures. Encryption is a must, but what are the specific standards?
For data at rest on a server, it's typically AES 256. For data in transit, moving across the network, you need to enforce TLS 1.2 or higher.
And we have to circle back to the backups. You said this is a big failure point.
A huge one. So many companies think a log file that says backup successful is enough. It's not.
So what do auditors want to see?
They want proof that you test your backup restoration quarterly to verify the data integrity. I've heard stories from auditors where a client's backup script ran perfectly for a year.
Right.
But when they finally tried to restore, they found out it was just copying empty folders. They had nothing. You have to prove you can actually get the data back.
That is, wow. That's the difference between doing a task and verifying an outcome.
Exactly. One last big area here is change management and incident response.
Okay.
Every change to your systems needs a formal request, approval, and testing workflow. You have to prove it was tested somewhere else before going into production.
And for monitoring, what's required?
You absolutely need some solution security information and event management to pull in logs from all your critical systems.
How long do we need to keep those logs? I'm thinking about storage costs.
The minimum requirement is 90 days, but all the sources strongly recommend at least a year. It just gives you a much better window to investigate a slow-moving attack.
And finally, you have to practice.
You have to practice. You need to conduct tabletop exercises to run through your incident response plans and prove your team knows what to do in a crisis.
That checklist is, it's essential, but it sounds incredibly overwhelming, especially if you're a small or medium-sized business without a huge security team.
It can be, but the sources are clear. SOC2 is achievable for SMBs. It just requires a structured approach. It doesn't necessarily require an enterprise budget.
So where does a smaller company even start with this?
It starts with a foundational risk assessment. You can't protect what you don't know you have.
Step one, asset inventory and classification. But what if you can't afford a fancy system for that?
A good spreadsheet. Seriously, you list every system, every cloud service, and you classify the data it holds. Is it public? Is it confidential? Is it personal customer data? You just have to know where your crown jewels are.
Once you know what you have, then you look for the holes. The threat and vulnerability analysis.
Exactly. You identify threats relevant to you, ransomware, phishing, whatever, and you run some basic vulnerability scans. Most cloud providers have tools for this built in now.
Which then leads to the impact assessment.
Right. You have to ask, if this threat hits that asset, what happens? What are the financial, reputational, and regulatory costs?
And once you have that whole picture, you can do the control gap analysis.
That's your roadmap. You compare what you're doing now against the SOC2 requirements we just talked about. The gap between those two is your to-do list.
Okay, let's demystify the audit itself. So you've done the work, you've closed the gaps. What are the two types of audits?
You have Type I and Type 2. SOC2 Type I is a point-in-time snapshot.
So it's for a specific day?
Yes. The auditor comes in and verifies that your controls are properly designed and implemented on, say, June 1st. It proves you built the secure house. The audit itself might take 4 to 6 weeks.
But most big customers want to see a SOC2 Type 2.
Because the Type 2 proves you're actually living in that secure house correctly. It examines if your controls operated effectively over a period of time, usually 6 to 12 months.
So it's not just that you have a control, but that you've been using it consistently.
Exactly. It carries so much more weight because it proves sustained compliance.
For a company starting from scratch, what's a realistic timeline and budget to get that first Type 2 report?
I'd say plan for 6 to 12 months. You just need that observation period for the auditor to collect evidence, cost-wise. Hmm. It's a real investment. Audit fees can be anywhere from $15,000 to over $40,000.
And that's just the auditor.
That's just the auditor. Then you have tooling assigned, scanners. That could be another $5,000 to $30,000 a year.
So when the report finally arrives, it's not a simple pass or fail.
Correct. The auditor issues an opinion. The goal is an unqualified opinion. That's a clean report.
Meaning everything was effective.
Right. If they find issues, they might issue a qualified opinion, which means controls were mostly effective, but there were some specific documented exceptions.
Which brings us to the big question. With all this cost and effort, what's the real strategic business value here? How is this more than just a tax?
It immediately becomes a revenue accelerator. The biggest, most tangible gain is accelerated sales.
How so?
Think about those massive 300-question security spreadsheets clients send over.
All the questionnaires.
Without a SOC2, your team spends weeks on those. With a clean Type 2 report, you just hand it over, and that whole security review process can be done in a day. It shrinks your sales cycle.
And that time is money, literally.
It is. Beyond sales, the process just makes you better. It forces you to find and fix vulnerabilities, often preventing incidents that would have cost way more than the audit. It also helps with talent attraction.
How does that work?
Good security people want to work at companies that take security seriously. SOC2 is a signal that you have a mature program with executive buy-in.
And you mentioned the insurance angle before.
Absolutely. Insurers see SOC2 as proof you're managing your risk. We're seeing companies with clean reports get better cyber insurance rates, maybe even higher coverage limits.
Before we wrap, let's hit on a couple of real-world challenges. First, shadow IT employees using apps without IT's approval.
Shadow IT is a compliance nightmare. You can't secure what you don't know you have. The audit process often uncovers these tools.
Oh, it's a fix.
It has to be diplomatic.
Yeah.
You need to get employees to tell you what they're using, but then you have to give them an easy official process to request new tools going forward.
And the other big challenge is legacy systems, old critical software that can't be easily replaced.
A very common problem. If you can't replace it, you have to implement compensating controls.
Meaning you build a wall around it.
You build a fortress around it. If the old server can't handle modern encryption, you put it behind a web application firewall and you use network segmentation to totally isolate it.
So after all this, what is the single biggest takeaway for you, the listener?
The core message is that SOC2 isn't a burden to be avoided. It's a strategic investment. It strengthens your business, it accelerates revenue, and it makes you more mature. And smaller businesses can absolutely do this.
That idea of it being an ongoing thing is the crucial final thought, I think. Because if you're thinking, great, I'll get my report and be done, you need to prepare yourself.
It's not a destination.
SOC2 compliance is not a destination you reach. It's a continuous state.
That's right.
Those Type 2 reports, they expire after 12 months, which means the day you get your first clean report, you are already collecting evidence for the next annual audit.
All those quarterly reviews we talked about, the access reviews, the firewall cleanups, the backup tests, they have to happen on schedule forever.
And be documented meticulously.
The moment you stop collecting that evidence, your compliance clock stops. And your chance of getting another clean report next year just vanishes.
So use the details from this deep dive to start building those continuous processes today. Thank you for joining us for the deep dive. We hope you feel ready to tackle that checklist and secure your future contracts.